This week on Potlatch, Larry Peterson on Native Power and Laura Burt on Land Claims and more Kachin music. Potlatch, a program about Alaska Natives for Alaska Natives.
Thank you.
Music from the Kwichin Athabascans of Interior Alaska, as is Larry Peterson, who represented Interior Alaska Villages for 2 years in the state legislature. I asked Peterson recently if he thinks Alaska Natives enjoy political power.
Yes, I do believe that the Natives within the state of Alaska have a lot of political input. If used right, can be an enormous type power. You can see if some of the races that have been held where if you don't carry Anchorage or Fairbanks or if you split, then the votes is either rural areas in southeast to carry it through. This has happened, you know, several times before in elections.
How do Native people in Alaska go about exerting their political power?
By possibly having conventions similar to this, in getting the people to understand more fully about how government works, how committees are set up, how to get things done by resolutions and other things, of having political figures come to the meetings and explain what they have done, what they are doing, and possibly for questions and answers as to whether they support, you know, rural Alaska and some of the programs within the rural communities.
Can political power grow by use of radio and television?
Well, I think as far as satellite communication goes, or any type of communication system, whether it's phone, whether it's radio, whether it's TV, has a lot of input in which for people to get a better understanding what's going on. Some of our news programs and stuff are on delayed basis. Most of our TV programs right in the larger cities like Anchorage and Fairbanks are not right on the spot of what's happening. Everything is delayed. I think Fairbanks is a week behind Anchorage, and Anchorage is I don't know how far behind the lower 48. In a lot of the villages, you don't have no phones, no communications, no nothing within the villages. And they do have sort of a satellite radio system that is set up, I think, with 19 villages. There are possibly some times that you think, you know, that, or a lot of people think, you know, that politicians do throw a lot of their letters away or do not answer them. But as far as being in politics and seeing how the system has worked, sometimes it takes a long time in which to get something done. And it's a continuous battle, especially for rural Alaska, being, you know, a representative that had covered one-third the state as a district, as a single member. It covered that much territory, and it covered, I think there was 42 villages in my first district, which was District 16. Now there's 32, but the area-wise is still as great as it was under District 16. The people should sit down and start seeing exactly what politicians do and start understanding how the system works and seeing exactly how most effective that they can be. And Juneau being in such an isolated area where it costs so much money for an individual to travel from here to there and most likely not be able to even get into Juneau at times with the weather conditions, to go down there and testify on some of these things. This is where we're really lacking, is that the villages don't have the money in which to send somebody down there at some of these committee hearings to testify on what the needs are. And if we can do that, I'd rather see the people come out from Juneau into the villages and get testimony that way instead of, you know, people coming in.
How do you recommend that Native people, in this, particularly in the villages, can learn about the political process?
Well, in most schools, they have American government system that's set up within the school system of the different type programs. I'm not an educator, so I'm not, you know, too familiar exactly what's going on within the school system itself. Although one of my committees at the, when I was in Juneau as a representative was health, education, social services, where I've sat and listened to, you know, quite a few of the different department heads on education, on health problems, and social services. And getting back to your question, as far as trying to train or get people involved and seeing what the political process is to get them involved in what's happening, what's going on, what's really, really being, what is a politician, what can he really do, and what can't he do, what his limitations are. And as far as a politician goes, I mean, he can only do what the people really wants because it's the people that have voted him in. And soon as a politician or any politician already knows this, that the needs of the people have to be met. But when you have an area like the rural areas where you have a small village and you have a larger village, and our whole political process as far as contributing campaign funding and the costs and stuff involved, then you start looking at a whole entirely different picture.
Thank you. This time I think I'm going to play a double take. Double take means that two women and two men, they're just dancing away. The old man, this is favorite song of the old man Charlie Crow. He's living in Fort Yukon for many years, and he's over 100 years old. That old man, that's his favorite dance music. Every time I play this tune, he go out there on the floor dancing away.
Of the Tanana Chiefs for lending us this album of music from Alaskan Kuchin Athabascans. Next we hear Levi Lott of Tuluksak interviewing Laura Burt about the land claim settlement.
Laura, how long you been working with the Native land claims?
Well, Levi, it's been a long time ago. I have to think that far back. I think approximately 1966. I've been, you know, involved in Native affairs for a long, long time. I think it was in about 1965, 1966, when there were several of us who were asked to testify before the House Interior Committee when they came up to Alaska on Native land claims. I think it was about then.
What was the reaction with the people in Washington when Native land claim was first introduced or proposed?
Well, there were quite a few trips that we had to make out to Washington, D.C. to talk to Congress at the different hearings. The first hearing that I had to testify, it was Aspinall was there. It was a House Interior Committee. Willie Hensley was there. Charlie Edwardson, myself, Emil Noddy, and John Borbridge, and one or two others. And I can remember it was my first time back east, and I was very, very anxious. I was sort of afraid, never having been out there before, never having to testify before a committee like this. And then all our testimony was based on Alaska Native needs. You know, we had very poor housing. We lived off the land. We had very poor educational and health facilities, and on and on and on. And just before I was going to get up and testify, Aspinall, who's a scruffy old man when he wants to be, very, very much like a bear, you know, he can really put you down when he wants to. And I forgot who was ahead of me, and he says, "I want to warn anybody else who comes up here to testify that we're tired of hearing about poor housing, we're tired about hearing about poor health facilities," and on, he says, "We don't want to hear that." And of course, part of my testimony, this is my first time up, you know, I was very afraid, and I thought, oh no, why should he say this now, you know, before I have to get up? And part of my testimony is based on this, because it's our way of life. This is how we lived. This is all we knew, and we were trying to better our lot in life. And I just had to apologize when I got up. And I said, "Mr. Aspinall, I'm very sorry, but I have to dwell on these because it may not be important to you, but it's very important to the Alaska Natives, and we're trying to impress upon you and Congress how we live. So if you'll just bear with me for about, you know, 2 or 3 minutes, and just listen, I said I'd be very appreciative. So I went on with my testimony. Then afterwards, I was waiting to be questioned by all these committee members, and I thought, oh boy, here it comes now. They're going to ask me all these questions about Alaska, you know, the down to the dollar cents and all these statistics, you know, and I thought, oh boy, now I'm really going to be in for it. And Mr. Aspinall said, did you say you're from Kotzebue? And I said, yes. He says, do you know about a man by the name of Abraham Lincoln? And Abraham Lincoln is, of course, he's dead now, but everyone knew him from the Nome and Kotzebue area, Notak and Kiani. He's a very well-known man. And his wife, Blanche, has been a midwife. You know, this is before we had the hospital, and she delivered all of us. And I said, yes, of course I know Abraham Lincoln very well. He says, well, I stopped by his house one day, and I sat and listened to all sorts of Native stories. He said he was a most interesting man. And he says, you know what? He says, that I had a piece of blueberry pie. The blueberries were picked right off the tundra. He says, that was the best blueberry pie I ever tasted. And, you know, I just sat there stunned.
Do you think Native land claims is fair to the people, considering the size of the land we're getting and all these deadlines that are required?
Well, of course, we all would like to have received more land. It was difficult receiving 40 million acres. During many of our meetings, many of our conferences, before the bill was drawn up, we were talking at one point 80 million acres. And there was so much controversy over the number of acres that we asked or wanted. And yet we wanted something realistic that Congress would, you know, sit down and listen to rather than just throw us out the door and having us to go to the Court of Claims or something like that, or wait for years and years and years. I wish there were more acreage. And
what about some of these deadlines?
I think the deadlines are unrealistic. I think that considering the many years that the government has made us wait regarding legislation, regarding our personal rights as American citizens, as Alaska Natives, I think they're unrealistic. I think that it's almost too one-sided. You know, they want something right now, but when we want something settled, it takes forever.
What are some of the things you feel that are needed information-wise among our people in the villages?
Communication in the state of Alaska has a lot to be desired. I think that, first of all, the Native Land Claims Act should be explained to our people in a manner that they could understand. I think that's a problem now. I think that perhaps, although we do have translators, it should be explained to them in a way that they can understand. And with communication being as hard as it is to get to the villages, I think the radio plays a great part in this. In May, I went out whale hunting in Point Hope. I was out on the ice for a whole week, not having gone into the village. This is with Senator Buckley and a few others. Mm-hmm. And we had a radio, and out there, you just depend on the radio. That's the only way you can get messages through. I think we ought to use the radio more often. We did when we were out on the ice. We listened to the news. We listened to the weather reports. We knew when the plane couldn't come in because the weather was bad, or who was sick and who should be called into the hospital for eye checks. I think that the information on Native land claims could be utilized to a great extent to the villages through radio. Thank you.
Potlatch, produced in the studios of KUAC in College in cooperation with KTOO Juneau, KOTZ Kotzebue, and KYUK Bethel, under Title I of the Higher Education Act.